Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer. Charlie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me here this morning. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to folks out there about what we're doing here at CBP.
So it's been more than 3 years since you were last on the show. So let's catch up on some of those priorities that you mentioned 3 years ago. One of your top priorities back then was CBP was planning on issuing several acquisitions for services just such as network engineering, testing, data center operations. Give us an update kind of where you're at in those areas.
Well, we recently awarded our service desk acquisition, and we're currently transitioning into our new vendor. Our network's architecture and engineering contract is in the middle of the acquisition process now, so hopefully that'll get awarded later on in the spring. And we're also working on recompetes of some of our data center contracts. That's the services within our data center, and doing some consolidation of some of the functions around what goes on in the data centers.
So let's back up. The service desk acquisition, your transition to the new vendor, give me a sense of what that is going to be. Is that help desk or is that more than just help desk?
Well, it's our tier one support for the help desk and some tier two support. It's roughly about 64, 65 contract employees that work together with about another 20 government staff. And they do everything from answering calls to issuing VPN tokens and what we use MobiKey as one of our direct access kind of vehicles. And so they also issue those too.
The other one you talked about was the data center services. What kind of services are we talking about here, and where are you in that acquisition strategy phase?
So that's everything from, monitoring the systems that are out there today to make sure that things are up and running, to database maintenance. It's kind of all the services wrapped together. I think it takes about three or four of our existing contracts and rolls that up into one acquisition.
Is there a timing around that yet?
Not right now. I don't have a time frame for it.
Let's talk a little bit about the data center consolidation initiative. That's something that's big from within DHS. Obviously, the administration, OMB, is pushing that. How are these initiatives kind of rolled into that data center consolidation effort? Or maybe they're not. Maybe they're separate and they're kind of attached on.
These particular acquisitions are separate, but tangentially, they fit into what we're doing with data center consolidations. So we've already started moving into the two data centers that the department has stood up, DC-1 and DC-2. Probably one of our biggest moves was that we recently completed our move to email as a service at the department, and we migrated about 73,000 mailboxes and calendars into that service. We finished up in early November, and right now we're still working a few kinks out, but for the most part, things are going well.
So, wow, 73,000 mailboxes. I mean, that is probably one of the biggest ones you're going to see across government. Obviously, USDA was over 100,000. Interior is going to be over 100,000 people. Give me a sense of how that's went. You said a couple kinks still being worked out, but overall, pretty smooth transition. Were you going from, for instance, Microsoft Outlook 2007 to 2010, or was it even an older system that you're going to a newer system? So maybe there was a little more complications there.
Yeah, it was. We were on 2007 and going to 2010, but the bigger issue was that we had an old server farm that was very out of date, and so we're moving on to the department's modernized platform. I think the difficult we had was in a big move like this, you end up with a lot of folks that have group calendars that you have to worry about moving those groups together, because in any organization structure, there's always ongoing meetings, ongoing things that people have to know. And if you get into large groups, as you move people over from an old system to a new system, you've got to keep those communities of interest together And that was some difficulty for us. But we worked through it with the department and with HP, and I think for the most part, we ended up pretty successful.
So you're not going to be the only one that's going to have this challenge. I mean, I think as more and more agencies move to email as a service, they're going to face the same thing. Any best practices that you would share with maybe some of your colleagues?
Well, I mean, it's kind of common sense stuff. Start small with a small test group and monitor, like, what's the percentage of successful migrations. We started out moving about 300 boxes a night, and then we kind of paused and looked at the ones that didn't make it, why didn't they make it, and we, you know, worked with HP and the department to kind of fix out any bugs in that migration piece, and then we got back revved up. And once we got to kind of full move out on the migration, we were moving about 1,500 boxes a night between Monday and Friday to get to our goal of the entire migration. The advice is start slow. Make sure that you've got a good process in place for not just the migration, but tier two support at your service desk in case you've got to deal with any folks that have any issues with, like, say, those group calendars, anything with missing contacts or linking to contacts. Those kind of issues seem to be the kinds of things that affect your workforce. They're not major things to fix, but you got to have staff available to help you. And then you need to be prepared for, there's going to be a backlog of tickets once you get through it. And you've either got to get resources in place to make sure those backlogs are being worked, or bring enough resources in up front so that you don't get a backlog.
Were you guys one of the first DHS components to move to email as a service, or has there been a kind of a steady move? Do you know if how early you are in the process?
So I believe we're the second component to move. I think FEMA was the first component to move to email as a service.
Is it giving you, in terms of the move, saving money, but also better service in terms of mobility or better connections from in terms of storage and things of that nature?
Funny you bring up storage. We haven't had a lot of governance around email, And so most of our users have enjoyed the ability to kind of use email as a storage system rather than an email system. And so in this move to email as a service, we were able to kind of have tiers of email service. So everything from a half a gig box up into 2.5 gig box to an unlimited box at different pricing. And so that way our customers end up seeing what it costs per year to have a box. And even at the high end, we end up at a little under $6 a month per box, which we thought was pretty reasonable.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to maybe talk a little more email, but some of the other parties as well. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer.
Do you want to volunteer in the new year, but you're wondering if one person can really make a difference? Join Greater DC Cares, Points of Light, and thousands of other volunteers in service in DC, Maryland, and Virginia. Register to join the 2013 Inauguration and Martin Luther King Jr. Weekend of Service and make a real impact by empowering communities, supporting veterans, and inspiring thousands of children. Learn more and register today at pointsoflight.org/MLK and greaterdccares.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Information and Technology and CIO. Now, Charlie, before break, we were talking a lot about your email as a service, the recent completed move back in November. One of the things you talked about was kind of a tiered storage for email, a half a gig, a gig, 2.5 gig, maybe more. How does that exactly work?
What we did was we went out to our customer base and surveyed what their usage of email was prior to the move. And so we allowed them so many boxes at, say, half a gig, so many at 2.5 gig, and so many at unlimited based on kind of what their usage and the funding that was available. And then that's kind of our baseline. And then what happens beyond that is there are additional services and or capacities that offices can then acquire, but they would come to the table and pay for those services separately. So it really kind of allowed us to put a cap on what the budget is within my office for email, and then allow offices to meter what they want more out of their email system and out of Outlook based upon their needs and usage. So it does allow them to get more value out of it based on what dollars they have to spend.
And if somebody who has a half a gig starts to reach that level and their office says, hey, we're not paying you, we're not going to pay for more storage, that's the kind of signal for them to delete, get rid of stuff, or move to the records management portion and get it out of their email and store it more properly. And that's part of the governance you talked about earlier.
Right. We actually have kind of a three warning systems. You know, we alert them when they get about 10% to the capacity. And then we alert them when they get right at capacity and tell them, hey, look, you know, you really need to clean your mailbox up. And then when they get percentage over capacity, we actually stop them and say, you can't get any more mail until you clean up your box. And that's, I think, pretty commensurate with what private industry does.
All right, so email as a service, that's a major change. But let's back up for a second, talk about maybe some of the other priorities you've been working on. Two of the big ones that are more customs and border protection wide type of initiatives are the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, as well as the ESTA program, the Electronic System for Travel Authorization. Last time we talked, those are two of your major priorities. Just give us an update on how technology is enhancing those two priorities.
With our ESTA system, that's our electronic system for travel authorization. We continue to get more and more people applying for that. That's where people fill out an electronic form and they make a payment, and then we vet them before they come into the country. That gives us some upfront information about them and allows us to do some pre-checks on them. That's worked out real well for us. And then on the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, we've used technology that utilizes RFID so that as a vehicle comes up to our primary lanes, we can query the vehicle and the vehicle crossing history and correlate that back to the driver to give us some real-time checks on not just the driver, but the history of the vehicle itself.
That way, if you have a vehicle who has a new driver, you still know, hey, this vehicle's come over, you know, twice a month for the last year versus the driver is someone who hasn't been over before. It's that type of that in terms of the technology being used that way.
It is. And it's helped us because obviously we're doing more in outbound these days. So if we know the vehicle crossing history on inbound while we're doing our outbound checks, we can see, well, how long were they in the country? How many times does the vehicle normally cross? Does this fit a pattern? Does it not fit a pattern? So it's really helped us in terms of correlation of other information back to is this something we need to take a closer look at or something we can just let move.
Do you have a few areas that you're going to focus on in those two programs over the next year or so in terms of adding more technology, more capabilities? Or are they at a point now where they're in the operation and maintenance phase?
Pretty much in the operations and maintenance phase, although, you know, we're always looking at ways to improve the flow. There's a lot of ports that are being either under new construction or reconstruction. And so trying to figure out how to best work those systems so that they fit in those ports. For instance, in San Ysidro, they're going to kind of a stacked configuration so that two cars get processed kind of simultaneously with booths that are back-to-back. So we've had to change some of the technology so we know exactly which vehicles in which booth. So we're working those kind of things to help with flow and make sure that we can move people quickly.
All discussions with you guys at CBP have to go back to ACE, the Automated Commercial Environment Program. Just give us an update of where ACE is, where it's going next.
We're feeling pretty good about the program. We implemented the rail and sea manifest, a release known as M1. Back in the early spring, we began, and that was completed around the end of September this year. And so we actually started decommissioning the old system, automated manifest system, and that work was completed about a month after we completed the implementation of the ocean and rail manifest system.
So you really turned off a system? I mean, we have to put this on the calendar and have a celebration, cake or something. I mean, you in government, that rarely happens. You know that.
It truly was a big milestone for us. In terms of kind of lines of code is how we measured it of the old system, we ended up turning off about 19% of our old automated commercial system and returning all that storage and everything back to the rest of the pool for everybody else to use. And so that'll help us kind of set some milestones for our strategy for getting off the mainframe altogether and getting migrated onto a new system. Also with respect to ACE, though, so we've done some replanning with ACE. We're currently going through some approval processes within the department to rework the rollout of functionality. And one of the big changes that we've made is that we moved to an agile methodology, and we brought in a program manager, Jacqueline Garrity, who has agile background. And so she spent the past 3 or 4 months reworking things like what's the structure of our program office need to look like, how to chunk out some of the remaining functionality into an agile methodology, getting the staff up to speed on how to work in an agile environment, and also getting us as the leadership, the management structure, to understand how do we need to operate in that environment, which is very rapid decision making. So we actually have an executive steering committee that meets every other week. It is comprised of not just our deputy commissioner and chief operating officer, but also the departmental CIO and representatives from the PARM organization up there that oversee major acquisition programs of this nature, and Mark Borkowski, who's our chief component acquisition executive.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We come back, we're going to get out of the old and into the new and talk about some of your new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner to the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it all the time.
What are we going to do if we lose the house?
It's time to stop thinking and start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options. We've helped over 1 million homeowners, and we want to help you. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Information and Technology and Chief Information Officer. Now, Charlie, before break, we talked a lot about some of your older priorities, some of your ongoing work, but let's talk about your new priorities. What do you hope to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
We spent quite a bit of the past 10 years focusing in on delivering more and more mission capability, and now we're at a point I've seen this happening more and more currently, where IT organizations are starting to focus internally and look at how to improve performance and lower their costs of operations. So we've struck out in a couple areas. One is that we're really working to kind of modernize our infrastructure. We had a number of infrastructure components at both the server level, switch level, the router level, that were well beyond end of life, some of them beyond 10 years old, if you can believe it or not. So we've been working on reducing the age of some of our infrastructure and modernizing that as we're going along. And so we've got a big push this year on getting some of those pieces implemented. We actually were able to go out and acquire quite a bit of equipment with some end-of-year funding last year. And so now we're working on the deployment of that infrastructure. And we think, one, it's going to help us move more towards cloud computing, allow us to collapse down, say, the number of servers that we have, and move to more virtualization, lower our power costs, improve the performance time and the availability time. It's going to allow us to migrate our network to more higher speed routers, and also doing some circuit upgrades, because as we're seeing a lot more bigger bandwidth information like video and streaming media coming across the network that we didn't see before. So that'll have better positioned us for the future. And also we'll be able to enable a multicast, which will allow us to do a lot more of that kind of video out across the network. That should help our mission space too, because with the more and more emphasis on economizing and lowering things like travel budgets, if we could do more video over the network, that means we can do online meetings and really save in those kind of areas. That's a big piece. But we're also looking at, we have a lot of tools in our environment, but we're using those tools in a very stovepipe fashion. So the mechanic's finally getting an opportunity to work on his own car. We're looking at a reduction in the number of tools that we use, but trying to change the way we use tools so that we get more end-to-end use out of them and put more monitoring in place so that we can understand the health of things before we have an outage or a problem, that we can do more predictive work in terms of getting to a device or getting to a piece of software before it becomes critical and getting it fixed or getting a patch in place. But also with some of the security threats and a lot more emphasis on patching and making sure that your operating systems are up to date, the tools that we're going to greatly allow us to address those ISVMs that are coming out from US CERT in a more real-time fashion and keep statistics on how well we're doing with keeping up with current patching. So it's not just the day-to-day work that has to be done, but it's also being able to show from a performance standpoint as an organization how we're doing. All that said, at the end of the day, that allows us to lower some of our labor costs because we don't have to have as many folks doing some of these activities that would have been manual before. And it also helps our officers from the standpoint of the systems are available when they need them.
You mentioned there's a lot of tools. You're trying to kind of rationalize tools. When you say tools, you're meaning kind of software, apps, collaboration. You can't have 14 different collaboration tools, for instance. Maybe you get down to one or two that everyone can use. That's the type of thing you're looking at?
Really more of monitoring tools. So tools for monitoring the network at various layers, tools for monitoring things like servers in the data center, tools that allow us to do that endpoint monitoring and patching of the endpoint devices. And then if you look at like where we're headed as a federal government, moving not just a kind of away from FISMA, but going to, you know, this real-time ability to monitor where you are from a security point standpoint and stay ahead of those threats, we're trying to go to tools that allow us to do that continuous monitoring of our environment to know what is it we need to do next to stay ahead of the next threat. So
in many ways, it's kind of the back office tools versus the front of the house tools to understand what's going on the network. How is the move to the DHS data centers helping you with that as well? Because I imagine some of those tools are already kind of in place there.
One of the big things is that we'll be able to not just leverage the tools, but they're the enterprise agreements that are in place, so that should help us lower costs. And it's also allowed us to kind of rationalize some of the functions out and maybe collapse those down, so that saves us labor too.
You mentioned cloud, you mentioned virtualization. Where are you looking? Obviously, email as a service is one of those areas. What's next for cloud?
Well, one of our big initiatives is our C3E cloud initiative, which allows us to stand up kind of a high-performance, big data environment to match up with our workload. We found ourselves a couple years ago kind of hitting the wall on some of the current technology we have. The P7s we had maxed out at well over 100%, and we do a lot of volume transactions. So we've moved more towards an appliance type of model where we're not doing as much integration of that entire stack. And that's one, it's allowed us to get environments stood up and in place much quicker. It was taking us in some cases over a year to get environments in place. We can roll out a new environment within about 14 days now. And it's also allowed us to increase our capacity by about tenfold. We're processing probably somewhere between 50 and 60 billion SQL queries a day, which is what we consider to be pretty high volume. I know there are folks out there that are doing more, but those are big numbers for us. And as we went to that higher capacity, we found our users then were able to run more queries, which drove our numbers up. But in an effort to stay ahead of the threats, we've been linking more and more information sets together to do that kind of real-time mashup of people and things before they hit the border. And that way we know what needs to be looked at and what the risk score is around them before it actually arrives.
You hear big data a lot nowadays. How important is big data for CBP? Are you seeing the use of data in different ways, the analytics, the business intelligence tools, really is somewhere going forward that's going to make a big difference in terms of how you meet your mission?
That term big data means a lot of different things to a lot of people. For us, it really is centered around kind of allowing us to do this risk scoring and utilize tools that, like I said earlier, help us figure out what is the risk around a person or a thing coming in, or, you know, whether it be cargo or a passenger or conveyance coming in. So we've actually been able to, with this environment, get out in front of some real-time threats and stop some either bad stuff from coming in, bad people from coming in, and in one case, a bad person who was trying to get out of the country before authorities could catch up to him. So the move's been good from us from a mission standpoint. We're really looking at expanding the use of C3E. That's our target platform. I know I talked a little bit about ACE earlier, but you know, ultimately, ACE will migrate to that target platform. I haven't talked yet about text modernization, but that is our target platform for our text modernization. So as part of becoming more efficient and effective, we're trying to rationalize down to a smaller number of environments, and the C3E environment really is our target platform for all of our applications in the future. One, it speeds our time to delivery up, and it lowers our development costs. So we're coupling that with kind of a services-oriented architecture and rolling out a services framework that will allow reuse across all of CBP. That means that, you know, with the four development areas that we have now, we don't have to develop as much in those four areas. We can share services across those four areas. And then outward facing, we're hoping to be able to share services with some of our other partner components, especially in the law enforcement community, because we share a lot of information today, and the ability to get through that to that data through services, I think, saves us money, it saves them money, and I think it'll benefit us all greatly downstream.
All right, sounds like we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Information and Technology and CIO. Charlie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us now and again with the online chat.
Thank you, Jason. And I have to say goodbye to my son who's going back to the Air Force Academy.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.